You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. This week's episode is split into two sides. This is Side A.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Clock Radio Speakers. I'm your host, Armand. You can follow me on Twitter at Armand Wake Up, A-R-M-O-N-D, Wake Up, all one word. You can follow us on Twitter at CRS Podcast. We're on Facebook, but we're not on Facebook because I looked on there today and saw that we hadn't updated in forever. But you can still follow us there.
Whoops.
Yeah, clockradiospeakers.com is the hub. iTunes, SoundCloud, all that good stuff. Fourthdistrict.com, all that good stuff. I think it's weird. Like now that I'm two weeks back in, now I remember the intro. Last week I was completely flabbergasted.
It's like a bike. You were like, okay, I'm good. Back up on the bike again.
Yeah, back in the building. Your boy back on the map. You know what I'm saying, what's going on, Doc?
I was hoping that you were gonna do the Dre in the building that he does on Compton, which is every time I hear it, all I can think of is you on the show.
I was supposed to do this whole episode in my Dre voice, huh?
It's okay. We have time. We'll find the right time for that. What's going on, buddy?
I have something to say about Dr. Dre's.
Oh, we got a lot. We'll get there. Real quick, everybody, what's going on? It's Doc. You can follow me on Twitter if you want, at @Doc_Beats, S not a Z.
No, follow Doc on Twitter, for real. I know I rap and do other stuff. Like, oh, then you are? You got gunshots going back there? You good?
You know.
Hey. You need me to send the goons out to Connecticut. Let me know. If you got any problems, just let me know.
Man. I had the phone in my lap and I moved it. Whoop.
Oh, okay.
It's all good.
Okay.
That was good. That was a good noise, though.
That was. You should have recorded that and like mixed it in and made a new snare.
You're right. It's not like I'm recording right now or anything.
Well, I mean, I was recording over it, so so maybe we can make that work.
Anyway.
Yeah, man. Follow Doc on Twitter, man. Hit him up on Twitter, man. He's a good follow. He doesn't tweet as nearly as much as I do.
No.
His tweets are consistently funny. If you want to get your Doc, you know what's funny, Doc? This is the funny part. So like out of the two of us, you're public enemy number one. So I may be quote unquote more well known than you, but you are definitely a figurehead when it comes to this podcast game. You know what I'm saying? Started this gangster. But like the funny part
was Steve.
The funny part is a lot of consistent feedback I got about last week was that people missed you and your perception and your stance and your theatrics and even just the stubbornness, the staunchness, the detail, all the stuff that encompasses Doc on Clock Radio Speakers.
What is this, the Doc Appreciation Society?
Absolutely. Hey,
I'm a charter member.
Own it. Get that Nobel Peace Prize, cuz.
So as you could hear us, we're already making the Dre jokes. We are obviously going to talk at some point today. No, we're going to spend, I'm guessing, most of this week talking about Dre's new album. I'm not sure if we're supposed to call it Compton or Compton, a soundtrack by Dr. Dre, but we're just going to call it Compton. It's only been out for 5 days?
Yeah, it came out. Well, the stream was Thursday night, and then right. It came out on iTunes at midnight.
So less than a week. It's been out less than a week as we record this now. So we are not going to offer our definitive, this is what we absolutely think of it. My opinion is never going to change. Because you shouldn't do that anyway, because your opinion always changes. But we want to talk about it, obviously.
Absolutely.
What else is going, before we get to that, man, what else is going on with you? Anything good?
Just started shooting videos for Rappity Rap stuff. So it's getting to that time where it's about time to start rapping. I'm about to start sending you stuff.
You got your executive producer all up in the video?
Actually, no cameos. The other video though, I do need a, when we shoot the video that I want to shoot. Yeah. I'm gonna have to get you a flight out here for a cameo. Cause you're going to want to be in this one.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm chilling, man. What's up with you?
Honestly, man. Just listen to music this week, you know. Compton was a good excuse to not just listen to Compton a bunch of times, but to revisit Dre's, frankly, stellar track record. I mean, granted, he only has two solo albums, so. But still, it's a good excuse to revisit that for me.
Three.
What do you count?
This is his fourth album.
It's not his fourth album.
Yeah, it is. The Chronic, then you got the Aftermath album, then you got 2001.
Nobody counts the Aftermath album. Doesn't even exist.
We're gonna count East Coast Killer, West Coast Killer. We sure are.
And we can count the Beat Switch on Been There, on Been There, Done That. But
which later became Razzcast's Ghetto Fabulous.
I never liked when Razzcast did that.
I didn't like it either. But I just remember the video when they did the ballroom dancing. Yeah, that was dope. That was dope.
Everybody was like, oh my God.
Yeah, that beat was crazy. Benny. You got guns. I got gas.
That's we all should have known, like, when that single came out, we're like, oh, he's lost interest. Like, the song is called Been There, Done That.
True.
Like, huge warning signs should have been going off for that.
Yeah, but the rest, never mind.
I know.
There's a lot of Been There, Done That in Dre rhymes since then.
Well.
A lot. We'll get to that.
Before we get to that, we have an unfortunate thing to talk about this week.
Yeah, yeah.
The incredibly surprising.
Yeah.
And very, of course, untimely passing of Sean Price. Sean P.
Ruck.
Right, Ruck.
Some of the old heads know him as Ruck.
People forget. For you, when did you really start listening to Sean P?
Back in the Helter Skelter days.
Yeah.
Yeah, back in the Helter Skelter days. I mean, Le Fleur Eshkoshka is one of the greatest hip hop videos, experiences, rappity rap, whatever, like, of all time for me. And the funny part is the video's not even that crazy. It's just them dancing. It's a bunch of, like, you know, thugged out dudes doing dance steps in like a white room. But it was incredibly dope. So yeah, from that, the Helter Skelter days, OGC, you know, Boot Camp Click, all the way through there. And then he had a resurgence in the early 2000s when he became Sean Price and he was putting out mixtapes and he linked up with Knife Wonder. And, you know, Sean Price was always good for a solid verse with some one-liners, some zingers. Like, he was a very competent MC. He's really, really dope. Really dope. So that was extremely unexpected and very sad.
This is going to sound somewhat blasphemous, especially for the older hip-hop heads who listen to this, but for whatever reason, that initial boot camp run, like, completely passed me by. And so, and then I never really listened. Like, the first time I really ever remember hearing about Helter Skelter was the video when BET started playing. I Have That? Is that the name of the
Yeah,
name?
That was with the
Hot Sex.
The Hot Sex, yep. Wow, I forgot about that record. Yeah.
And so that was back when I was really doing the Columbia House / BMG thing. So I'm pretty sure that album was one of those that I picked up. Literally, that was back when it was like, oh, you have a video that I'm listening to regularly on Rap City or whatever. It's like, yeah, cool. We'll add that to the list.
Yep, absolutely. Oh my God, Columbia House, like, there's so many bad albums I picked up off of there. Just off of one song or even hearing a snippet on a commercial.
Listen, no album is more embarrassing than the fact that I own the DJ Kool album.
Oh man.
I own, there's like 8 versions of Let Me Clear My Throat on that album.
Ah, that's funny. Yeah, man. He did. DJ Kool had that and the water dance, and that was it.
It's really the case where it's like MTV Jams, I think, especially played that Let Me Clear My Throat record over and over again.
Word to Bill Bellamy and his Dry Curl. Absolutely.
And so it was really just like, yeah, throw that on. Some of the records that I'm like, yeah, throw that on, became some of my favorite albums ever.
Yeah.
Some of them, you threw it on and you're like, oh, like, it didn't take you long. But the problem was, because we're really old, like, for most people, like, especially once you made the switch to all CD, like, initially I had, like, the Walkman, like, the cassette for my portable, but I had CD at home, so I would just make mixtapes, literally.
Uh-huh.
But then once you got the Discman, you're not carrying around the tapes anymore. And this is before CDs were burning. So in my backpack, I've got the 20 CD binder, the little mini one.
Yep.
And when I wanted to hear Let Me Clear My Throat, I had to pull out the DJ Kool CD.
You casually listen to Let Me Clear My Throat?
I mean, I don't know if anybody casually listens. I've
only heard Let Me Clear My Throat, like, at, like, parties and school dances and stuff. I was never, like, in the cafeteria, like, yo, man, I want to hear DJ Kool. I was never sitting in lunch line with my headphones, like, yo, I need that DJ Kool, son. I got the song stuck in my head. But hey, more power to you. Still hip hop. No shade, no slander.
No,
DJ Kool at all.
All that to say, that's that. Talk about an embarrassing album. Anyway, back to Sean P. You joked before we started recording, or at least before we started the show proper, that you knew immediately what my favorite Sean P song is, and that's Heartbreak.
Absolutely.
That's just like right producer, right moment, right sample for me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when I was in my formative, like, not formative years as a hip hop head, but more formative years as learning how to produce.
Yeah.
Came right in that wheelhouse, and I went and listened to it, and I was joking with you again just before we got on. Like, all of a sudden, I'm like, man, I kind of miss those old Ninth Wonder snares. Now, if that doesn't make you chuckle, I'll explain why. There was a period of time where when Ninth Wonder came out, he was using what sounded like, on a lot of songs, like the same exact snare, in some cases like the same drum pattern, but he would just use it over and over again to a point where for hip hop fans it became, would you call it like a joke, or at least like a running sort of haha, I can't believe he did that again.
I don't know,
that just us nerds online?
I think that was nerds online.
So it was all that to say, you know, went back and I want to listen to some Sean P, and I was like, Harper, I always forget about that record, but then I end up not forgetting about it because every so often I'll come back to that sample and I'll forget and I'll be like, why haven't I sampled this really yet? And then I start listening to the sample. I'm like, oh, that's why.
That's why, because it's Heartburn.
Right, because it's Heartburn.
Feel it.
So, yeah. So he was supposed to have a project coming out.
Songs in the Key of Price.
It's a very Sean Price album cover.
Absolutely. Can we just also mention that his Master P cover is one of the greatest covers in rappity rap history?
Just in general, like he brought a sense of humor that you used to see a lot from 90s guys. Like, I want to say him and Redman both had similar sense of humor, but they both brought like a comedic sort of personality, not just to when you saw them like in an interview or on TV or even in a video, but even just to their verses that you don't really get as much of that anymore.
Yeah, everybody's really serious when they rap. And granted, you know, Sean Price and Redman are both extremely respected lyricists.
Oh, absolutely.
But they're one line, like I said earlier, they're one-liners, they're zingers. Sean Price would just say something completely out of left field that'll make you laugh, but it's still lyrically inclined. It's still dope.
Right. I mean, just think of like the opening bars from Heartburn even, right? I mean, talking about coming home, watching Nick at night.
Yeah. Yeah, selling Nicks that night. Yeah. Like, I mean, yeah, I wish more rappers had funny, like they injected a little more humor into their rhymes. Everybody's a little too serious nowadays.
People are real serious.
Yeah, like really, really, really serious. You know, like laugh a little, you know what I'm saying? Like, have a joke, man. That doesn't mean you have to be goofy or whatever. Like, it still works, so.
So, if someone's listening, if they aren't a real big Sean P head, but they've heard maybe one or two of his songs before, like if you had one song that you feel people should go check out from Sean Price, what would you say?
Oh, shoot. I mean,
or even just a song that you particularly like of his.
Man, I like a couple. Like, I can't just
go old. Go 90s.
Jesus.
I'm putting you on the spot.
You are putting me on the spot. I'm just you're like, well, do one song. Like, it doesn't work that way.
Okay.
You know, if you want Sean Price, you could go Peabody, you could go Onionhead. One of my favorite freestyles, I forgot the name of the mixtape. I really did. I think it was like Donkey Price Jr. or something like that. He rapped over You Don't Know My Name.
Mm.
Alicia Keys, is called It's Nothing. I like that record a lot. You know, if you want to go back into the boot camp click days, of course, Le Fleur, Shkoshka, I Ain't Having That. Operation Lockdown.
That's good, man. You it's all good.
Yeah, like there's just a lot, man. Just revisit that. Just revisit. There's nothing wrong. It's gonna get cold in about 8 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good time to bust out that Duck Down catalog, man, and not just their greatest hits. Like, really delve into that stuff. There's some, I think the Beat Miners are very underrated for their musical contributions to hip hop. You know, like you said, it just completely passed you by. And Boot Camp Click was right up there with Wu-Tang and, you know, a lot of the sort of the East Coast Renaissance that was going on in the late early 90s, the beginning of the mid 90s, into the mid 90s. So just check out all the Duck Down stuff.
So last week we talked fairly extensively about Drake and Meek Mill. One thing I wanted to follow up on that real quick. So, well, first of all, we affectionately refer to what you might know as weed carrier rappers as now. We joke and we call them belt holders, but we'll just say maybe call them minor players. All of a sudden, the minor players are going after each other. We've got that happening.
Yeah.
But I thought this was really, really interesting. Back to Back is on the pop charts.
I mean, shoot, you stream a song, your song gets streamed 21 million times in less than a week. I would expect it to hit Billboard.
It's actually number 21 on the Billboard Hot 100, which is crazy. But actually, that whole batch of Drake records, I believe they all made the top 100. At least Charged Up and Hotline Bling did as well.
I mean, yeah, he should.
It's crazy. But it seems like we've sort of died down a little bit, right?
Who? Hip hop?
No, I mean hip hop's dead. The back and forth.
I mean, Meek is still sending shots on tour, but it's over.
Right.
It's over. So this is actually a good chance for me. I mean, God, like this summer is so crazy. And as fast as Twitter moves, you know, again, 2 weeks ago, Action Bronson was Public Enemy number one. Last week, Meek Mill is Public Enemy number one. Today, Geno Smith is Public Enemy number one. Meek has a really good opportunity to finish out this leg of his tour, shut up for a little while, and like we said last week, just come out with some great music and, you know, put all this behind him pretty much. Because this is, you know, if he continues to engage in the weed carrier rap, like, it's going to look bad on him. And stop. Listen, this is one thing I'm just say for rappers who listen to this and may get into a rap battle or rap beef in the future. Stop using the other person's beat. That doesn't, like, I've heard the majority of these disses have been over back to back. Stop. Stop. Either get new production or use something else that is, like, hard and can still be, you know, it's like a battle rap beat. There's a whole bunch of them. Not just talking about Shook Ones Part 2 either, like,
honestly, even just for the historical reference, I'm really surprised you didn't try to do anything over Ether.
No.
I don't want to hear that, but I'm not surprised.
No. No. No, I'm surprised that you even said that.
You know I don't like that beat. I'm just saying.
Okay, listen. If you like the Ether beat, let us know. Hit us up at CRS Podcast so I can block you. So I could mark you as spam, mute you, and block you. That is one of the worst beats in rap history. No. No. I'm itching for a rap battle. If you diss me over the Ether beat, we have nothing to discuss. I'm going to rap about you rapping over the Ether beat. Like, you pick Ether?
And then when Iman asks me to mix it, we're going to throw in some Ether Boy ad-libs.
Yo, wifing in the club, give me $20. No. Yeah, we just gonna. Yeah, that's what I'll do. I'll diss somebody. If you rap over the Ether beat, I'm gonna respond and rap over nothing but Ron Brown's beats.
Jumping out the window.
Jumping out the window. Pop champagne.
A-Rap music. A-Rap money.
Oh, A-Rap money. Yes. Listen, go on YouTube. And I think it was, I don't know if it was Busta Rhymes. I believe DJ Khaled was in the video. They went to somewhere in the Middle East. I don't know if it was Egypt or something like that. I don't want to sound ignorant and
right, whatever, right.
But like they went somewhere to the Middle East, and I don't know if they had a show there or something, but it's a bunch of Middle Eastern men, you know, traditional Muslim garb and all that stuff. And they're all outside with DJ Khaled doing the A-Rap money dance. It is hilarious. I forgot all about that video, and I'm going to watch it. See, there's a point in time before the internet, like before social media really popped off, and then right after MySpace died. This is like right in the midst of when blog rap was real heavy.
Like 2007?
Yes. There's a lot of underrated and understated YouTube videos that happen that are hilarious and amazing and forgotten about. So everything from, I mean, God, Busta Rhymes alone is responsible for a few of them. His Busta Rhymes and Timbaland in the studio, when they find that medley on accident on Timbaland's keyboard. Like, people forget about all this stuff. So Soulja Boy's video on World Star, where he talks about Charles Hamilton for 6 minutes. Hilarious.
How about people just Charles Hamilton in general?
Oh, You punched me, though. I ain't mean to do that. That's one of the greatest videos as well, too. Like,
remember he, like, stole that dude's beat?
Oh, he did, didn't he? Yeah, because then the guy...
He's posting screenshots, and the screenshots gave him away, and it's like, oh, no.
Oh, man. Man, there was a point where Charles Hamilton was, like, right there.
Yeah, what would you compare him to somebody now? He was, like... Like, what level? Like, he's... He was more like Childish Gambino, like, 2 years ago. 3 years ago. Like, sort of bubbling a little bit, but not quite there.
He was at the point where he had a lot of eyes on him, and he needed the right... See, in those days, it wasn't really about the single. It was still about your project. Mm. So he needed, like, a project to really, like... blow him up or take him to that next level. And it wasn't that his music was bad. It was, number one, he put out too much music. And then number two, he was blogging. He was like, he was doing way too much.
The Sonic thing was, you know.
It was, I mean, but you know, like, I get that. That was his gimmick, but it got a little crazy. It got a little crazy, unfortunately. Because he had some joints. I can't remember like everything, but I remember he had some joints. I feel bad about that.
There was a handful of like quote unquote blog rappers who just never, like, we all thought they were gonna be huge.
All them dudes, man. I think we talk about this
twice
a year. So everything from You and I to
Cool Kids
to oh my god,
Cool Kids, man.
They bother me so much.
Why?
No, because it's not even their fault that things didn't pan out the way that, you know, a lot of us feel like they should have. They like, the landscape just wasn't ready for them.
Right. They were, like, 2 years too early. Easy.
They were way too early. Way too early. Yeah, no shots at Cool Kids. Like, no. I remember seeing that. What was the name of it?
Black Mags.
Yo, like, who knew what to do with that song?
Right.
Who knew what to do with that song? It was way, like, that was, like, hipster rap or whatever. Like, right. That's what cats are doing now.
Right. No, Black Mags comes out right now.
It's still a dope record. It still does damage. So
never mind that, like, the way that just Billboard, like we talked about Drake earlier, like Billboard charts now reflect streaming. There was a whole era where it didn't. So if you were getting a lot of streams online, that wasn't really being captured in any sort of way.
Yeah.
Whereas now it is. So yep. It means that if your following is online, that can be captured. And yeah, you know, who cares about Billboard? But where it matters is it means that all of a sudden people recognize that you're there.
Yeah.
Right? If off the strength of streaming, if you pop up on Billboard, like, you're going to get added to radio.
Right.
Even if it's just a first on a mix show or whatever. Like, it's more of a connection now. It's still not perfect.
Right. Right.
But it's way better than it used to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. It was the era of, like, some people have figured the internet out, but the rest of, like, everybody else was like, man, what is this thing? You know?
Yeah. It was like, MySpace is whack. What do we do now? You know what I'm saying? Like, it was crazy. Kids in the Hall.
Oh, I forgot about Kids in the Hall.
Kids in the Hall. Yeah. Double O and Knowledge, man. Like, remember that? Remember there was that time where, like, everybody, there was, like, I think Jay-Z, them, and Gang or Puff all used the Shaft in Africa sample at the same time.
Funny how stuff like that works.
It's crazy.
Just Blaze has been involved in a couple of those, hasn't he?
Yeah, he also did a PSA.
The PSA, yeah.
PSA with the Black Moon record.
Right.
It's real?
I think so. I don't remember the Black Moon record.
It's real.
Oh, those mid-2000s. All right, man. Anything else you want to talk about this week before we get into Dre?
Nothing, but I almost want to, like, low-key go back and listen to some of those records now. And, like, do an episode on, like, those guys, because I feel like they need some shine, because they really fell on the sword for what 99% of us independent artists do now.
And it's funny because that happened around the same time that there was that pack of New York City mixtape guys we've talked about endlessly on the show, that mid to late 2000 group that theoretically should have been next up.
Who remind me, who are you talking about?
Saigon.
That was like the end of their run, though.
True. But to me, it's there's like these little bubbles of like artists who, because like music in the world was changing so much, it just didn't happen for them.
Yeah.
Right? In one case, it's that for those New York guys, it's that everybody else was like, you know, we don't need to only get stuff from New York mixtapes anymore. Right. They came just a smidge too late. And then for people like acts like the cool kids, or you and I, Pac Div, who, oh my God. Those acts, it was like they were just too early. It was that in between stage.
Yeah.
Right? Ringtone rap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Messed it all up. Mm-hmm. Now I'm sounding old.
Hit us up if you spent $4 on a ringtone but then didn't buy the single for 99¢ on iTunes.
I remember that was when I was doing, like, you know, music conferences and stuff like that. And to hear, like, people from labels talk about the economics behind ringtones, you're sitting there, and, you know, I was early to smartphones, and the ringtone thing really, like, I would say, like, once the iPhone got somewhat popular, like, those died off completely. I'm not saying it's because of it. I'm just saying right around the same time. So this is like 2007, 2008. I had a BlackBerry, but not everybody had a BlackBerry or, you know, a phone like that. So I'm sitting here and I'm like, why would I pay for a ringtone? Like, but they couldn't, like, it, you know, money was coming in. They didn't want to question it, but, like, absolutely, they were really talking about it like it was a revenue stream for a long time. And I'm just sitting there looking at my then BlackBerry and I'm like, this is only going to get better. Like, this is, don't rebuild your entire industry around ringtones.
Right. Right. That's crazy. Do you remember Just Blaze's YouTube channel?
Yeah.
And the Megatron Don blog?
Yeah.
So those Saigon studio sessions, them playing Fight Night and getting the Rico TZO clothes.
Oh man.
Some of those videos reworking the TI record because the sample wouldn't get cleared. Like, I miss those. There's a couple of those still on YouTube. I found them like a couple months ago, but he deleted his channel, unfortunately.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You know, Just Blaze. Anyway.
You ready to talk about Dre?
I'm ready, man.
So we talked a little bit about the setup last week, but real quick. So Dre for 13 years, 14 years, I don't know, has been rumored to be working on Detox. And there's been all sorts of, I don't want to say excuses, but there's been all sorts of, oh, well, this album got a lot of the Detox records. And then this album got a lot of Detox records, right? I mean, originally it was supposed to be, you know, was that what? Get Rich or Die Trying, like, those were some Detox records. And then there were
the Detox. In the club. How We Do.
Right.
Higher?
Higher, yeah.
Higher, yeah. Maybe even West Side Story. There was a couple of game records.
Right.
But yeah.
So Detox has been rumored for a very long time. It was
shout out to Detox. he said it on Higher. Anyway.
Higher is such a dope record.
Documentary is a dope album, man.
There's some record. We're gonna talk about Game today. So for a long time there was a lot of noise. We had remember Peer Pressure? With Jay?
I remember the picture. Excuse me. I remember the picture of them in the studio, but I don't remember the song.
It's got the Kraftwerk sample. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
I just remember. I remember the record with, like, was it called High or something like that? And it was Dre and Snoop.
I remember Kush. I don't remember High.
Kush. That's High, Kush, something. Something about weed.
Right. There was Kush with Akon. There was I Need a Doctor, which, you know, you and I talked about this last week briefly, but, briefly, mildly terrified that we would get something even resembling I Need a Doctor on Compton. But aside from, and then, you know, it's funny because I Need a Doctor was really successful commercially anyway.
That video?
But aside from that, and then that sort of fizzled out, and then there was nothing. And then Dre is, I don't know if he's like executive producing. He's heavily involved in the Straight Outta Compton movie.
Yep.
He's going, you know, they're doing the shooting of it. He feels himself getting inspired. And so was it on the first? Yeah. On the first, he announces on Beats 1 on his Apple Radio show. He announced that, that Detox is dead. He's got an album called Compton coming out. There was really absolutely no leaks. The closest to a leak we got was the beat for Talking to My Diary at the end of a Beats commercial that came out the day before, which, you know, not much of a leak, really. So no leaks, which for an album of this magnitude is pretty good. Now, it helps when you can release it on Apple Music whenever you want.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we'll talk at some point, and we can even do that now if you want, just about the rollout and sort of the concept of, you know, we've seen iTunes releases before, but then those are typically immediately also available on Spotify or RDO or your streaming service of choice. But, you know, now we're in the exclusives era where, you know, obviously since Dre works for Apple, which is kind of weird, right now, at least it's exclusively on Apple Music and iTunes.
I don't think we'll ever see it on any other.
Physicals are, I believe, coming this week or the week after. So that would be interesting if it was available in physical form. But other than that, iTunes and Apple Music. So the actual rollout was that the idea was on Thursday night, the night before the album released. There was going to be a 3-hour stream, and nobody really knew exactly how it was going to work, but it's a 3-hour stream on Apple Music. And then, of course, people found the link early, because it wasn't like he was actually, like, at 9 o'clock, there wasn't somebody hitting play on the album. It was, you know, it was already up there. And all it was a 3-hour audio file that just loops, it was just over 3 hours, and it just loops Compton 3 times. So people found it. So roughly like 7, 8 o'clock, Thursday night, people are listening to it, and then it drops actually, you know, legit quality for real on first thing on Friday morning. Did you listen to like any of those, like any of like the streams the night before? Or did you just wait till Friday and you said, all right, let me see what this is about?
So I was in church when it came out, when you sent me the text and said the album was streaming. So when I got out, I was trying to look forward to whatever. I found a stream, but the stream was low quality. Mm-hmm. It was in such a low quality that I didn't want to listen to it till I got a real copy. And even now, I want a CD copy of this album, because with Dre, so much is said about his mixing and things that you hear and don't hear and that you need certain speakers for. I want the full Dr. Dre experience. So I'm going a little far ahead, but I did listen to it a little bit on Thursday, but I waited until Friday to like fully, you know, to get it.
Got it. Right. And so actually, just real quick, speaking of quality, like roughly speaking, you know, if you've ever gotten music online, whether illegally or legally, the quality that iTunes puts out is roughly equivalent to a 320 MP3 rip. So if that's what you're used to, that's what's out there now. But if you really want to get extra nerdy, then yes, the actual CD would be the one for you. What I want to talk about before we actually talk about the songs is I want to talk about something that I realized, something that was sort of on my mind a little bit. Like, it sort of stuck out when I was listening to the album, and I wanted to go back and listen to Dre's previous work to see if maybe I was like being extra nostalgic or anything. When you think of Dre, like, I'm gonna ask you, Armand, you can stand in for the audience here. Do you think of Dre as a pop producer?
No, and I'll tell you, and no, because I have been, Dr. Dre's music has been involved in my life since the first N.W.A. album, and I'm not talking about Straight Outta Compton. I'm talking about N.W.A. and the Posse,
right?
1987, Easy Does It, 1988. So I've seen Dre in all forms of Dre. So no, at the end of the day, I think he's in hip hop. He's a hip hop producer. I just think he's an artist for one. Right. But if you want to, you know, tack a genre on him, he's a hip hop producer whose music has gone pop. I think he's a figurehead.
Well, hold on. We'll get there.
Okay. All
right. Here's why I'm asking. I'm asking this because I think of Dre now, he's obviously a hip hop producer, but the structure to his records are, it's a pop record. Especially his solo work. I mean, The Chronic, and then obviously Doggy Style quickly following, and then what he did with, you know, you can call it the Aftermath sound, right? What 2001 established, even though there was hints of it before, and then what he followed up with the M Projects and 50 and all his other work. His records always had structure. You know, they were obviously, and I will always give Dre credit, like when he comes out with something, it is, because it's going to sound like a weird phrase. It is state-of-the-art hip-hop, right? It is cutting-edge. Like, he is not typically one to follow trends. But his songs always had structure. They might sometimes be elaborate and dependent. You know, Chronic doesn't sound like 2001 necessarily, but they actually feature sort of like what I would consider like a pop structure to a song, right? So Dre beats... And Dre's songs on his previous solo albums, they all had really similar structures. And once you hear it out loud, and hopefully as I explain this, people will go back and listen and hopefully they'll agree. Otherwise, I'm going to sound like a crazy person. But basically, songs will typically have like a main musical idea, right? Whether it's a loop or piano riff or whatever it is. And it was often accompanied by a supporting musical idea. So like the play and the counterplay sort of, right? Verses are typically 16 bars in Dre records, and they would often feature the main musical idea, so the main loop or the main riff or whatever, for the first 8 bars. And then the supporting idea comes in for the second 8 bars. Sometimes it drops out at the very end to allow the hook to really build up, but most of the time it doesn't. Then the choruses had a catchy hook, often rapped, which is a very stark contrast to this album. Sometimes sung, but often rapped, with both the main and the supporting musical ideas. And then a third element on top of that that often mimicked one of the other two things, just with a different instrument or something like that. Like, think about, whether it's, his work on Chronic, where it'd be like often, you know, there's a sample, but then there's like a synth whistle, right? And then the bass line will come in. Like, so his songs were always incredibly well structured. Like, this is pop music. And I say that in a, like, I'm applauding him in a sense. Like, The Chronic introduced white, like, teenage America to gangster rap. Like, MTV embraced the image that they were presenting, and like, it totally changed the course of hip hop, right? And it's not just because of the image. It's not just because, yeah, the beats were catchy. Like, they were designed to sound like, this is how pop music sounds, right?
Yeah.
There are key points on this album. There are many songs in this album where Dre does not use a conventional structure at all.
Absolutely. I noticed that a lot.
Dre, like, when you listen, and I'm not even just trying to be nostalgic. When Dre made The Chronic, when he made 2001, there were a lot of hits, a lot of singles. And it's not just because, yeah, the records were really good. They were designed to sound like singles, right? The next episode is the rare Dr. Dre song that has an unconventional structure but ends up being a single. But otherwise, when you go and listen to that first run of songs on 2001, right? They follow a pattern, and it's not that they sound repetitive, but there's just a structure to how pop music typically sounds. It's just what people like to hear. Compton does not do this, and I wanted to talk about this because I want to lead into the album. The most surprising thing about this album is how little he tries to make it appeal to radio. This is not an album where he's trying to have radio hits at all.
I think we're seeing more of that though.
Mm.
You know, I mean, it sort of reminds me, the way you're explaining this to a lesser degree reminds me of the J. Cole album.
Mm. Okay.
Where it's more about the body of work, and what you're buying is the experience of the artist. And from there, you know, Cole sort of allowed the audience to pick whatever the single was, because those initial run, the initial run of singles were the ones he shot videos for weren't radio friendly songs. Right. Even same thing with To Pimp a Butterfly. Even though All Right was like completely obvious, it sticks out like a sore thumb just because of the musicality, but it still fits well in the context of the To Pimp a Butterfly story.
Sure.
So I think not everybody's going to do that, because everybody can't do that. But those artists who still harp and put a lot of weight and focus on the full project experience, I think they're able to get away with that a lot more nowadays, especially since there are other means besides the radio in order to get your message out. And people they're buying your song, but they're more importantly, they're buying you. There's a much heavier focus on that. You know, your song is dope, but you know, if you're a butthole on Twitter, people aren't gonna like you. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
but if you're a nice guy on Twitter, if you say the right things, you do the right things, or you know, if you have a really dope video or visual, or you have a really good interview on the Breakfast Club, people will buy your album. Or they'll at least stream it on Spotify. At least they'll give you a listen.
They'll give you a stream.
Yeah, they give you the stream. They give you the half of 3 cents, you know, for the whole album. So, you know, I think we're seeing that more, and we're going to continue seeing that more. So I'm not surprised that this Dre album doesn't have any singles. And plus, I don't think Dr. Dre needs the radio.
I don't think Dr. Dre needs the radio. I don't disagree. And I don't, like, I'm not saying that he doesn't have singles, like, oh, that's great, like, he's just trying to make quote unquote like hardcore music or anything like that. It's more that Dre has always been about the singles. And I don't, again, not in a bad way. Like, it's just typically the way that he approaches making music is that regardless of the actual like instrumentation that's happening, and you could do a whole other show about how Dre typically does his music because it's actually pretty interesting to talk about. But just all I'm saying is like he typically structures his songs in a certain way, and for me it was almost jarring because there is only a handful of songs on here that even attempt to be structured in a typical way. There's like weird like interludes in the middle of songs where it's like a back and forth with him, and typically actually there's two examples where it's him and Anderson .Paak. There's songs that are two parts. There's songs, I mean, you know, there's all sorts of weird structures going on here. So it's, you know, I use it's my favorite overused phrase. It's just so interesting and it's so unusual. And I'm still trying to figure out why. And I haven't really figured that out yet. There's a lot about this album I haven't figured out yet.
Yeah. So, and that's why I'm glad you gave the sort of disclaimer before that we weren't going to be able to really break this album down, because there's a lot going on. And I think on top of that,
I want to break it down, but you know, this is a work in progress.
you have all the fun with that. I mean, because for me, I've been waiting on this album since 1999, since November 16th, 1999, when 2001 came out. So there's a fandom in me where it's like, hey, here's a new Dr. Dre album. Maybe I don't want to like break down the details of it. Like, I just want to ride around the city and listen to it and enjoy it, you know what I'm saying? And then try to understand, you know, what he was trying to go for, what he was doing, or why there's no single. I'm just excited that, you know,
right,
an artist who has been very consistent in the musical landscape of my life is putting out new music. Like, hey, good for him. And, you know, straight out, again, like, people, I am such a West Coast head. So, you know, this NWA movie coming out this weekend, and I just know, even though I'm consistently listening to NWA, I already know I'm going to create like a Dr. Dre playlist on Spotify or a West Coast playlist on Spotify and just go in. So, you know, I'm just happy to get in that. Oh, but to respond to your point about, again, with Dre and the single, like, I think Dre can get away with it. I think Dre has always been sort of ahead of the curve.
Okay.
So, you know, maybe he understands that, hey, I don't need a single. Because you're right. When I think about, you think about every Eminem album, there's always the standout, like a sore thumb song. So there's My Name Is, there's The Real Slim Shady, there's Without Me, 50 had in the Club, Amusement Park, Candy Shop.
Amusement Park. I forgot about Amusement Park.
Amusement Park. You know, so you're right. He's always had the, yeah, this is good, but where's the single? Well, in 2015, you may not necessarily need the single, especially not Dr. Dre, especially if, and this is what we talked about last week, if Dre is going the Jay-Z route and allowing the movie to give him a little more of a creative freedom that he can hide behind and work from. So, you know, maybe it is, you know what? It's not about the single. It's about this entire body of work representing this movie.
Mm.
You know, so I don't know. There's a whole bunch of ways that this could go.
So I'm going to go track by track on this. I know that you don't want to like commit to your, this is my all time opinion on the song, but hopefully we can go back and forth a little bit about at least what we're thinking right now about these songs. The intro is, I don't know who that is or who that's supposed to be. I don't know if it's a sample or if it's somebody recording specifically for this album, but it opens with somebody talking about, you know, Compton was the American dream, lays out sort of like how Compton was supposed to be like this place for middle class African Americans to live, and then what happened, you know, the dream goes sour. The timing for this is really interesting. I think people forget that, like, at least I think people forget now that early the early Dre work, really, like the NWA stuff, and even, you know, stretching into like his early Death Row work, and even just the early West, like that early 90s West Coast sound. Like, there was definitely, I would say, a little bit more activism going on. A little bit more awareness of specifically racial issues.
Man, I think the Chronic is understated about the, from a conceptual standpoint. Hmm. This is a very conceptual, very politically charged album. This is the LA riots.
Right.
And I think when we talk about the LA riots, I don't think the Chronic is stated enough that was the soundtrack to LA. I lived in California during that time. I was 8 years old, and it really captured the state of Southern California, LA, South Central, Watts, Compton. Like, it really captured that very, very well. And I think that's understated and unappreciated in the grand scheme of things.
And this, you know, this intro, it really, it comes at a really interesting time. I believe actually today or yesterday is actually the 50th anniversary of the beginning of the riots in Watts in 1965 in LA.
Which
really had been building for a long time, but it's just such a, you know, if you look at what's going on right now, and that would be a whole other episode of Clock Radio Speakers, and we might have to do something at some point again. But you look at the situation with, you know, in this country, and how not even just in certain parts of the country, but frankly in most parts of the country, how African Americans are treated specifically by police. It's amazing. Like, the intro just put me like in a frame of mind where it's like, it gave me sort of a little bit of a historical reference for Compton, you know. And I like to really, like, know, I'll like nerd out about the details and everything else, but like the relationship between Compton and Watts, and I'll just say that the intro put me in a frame of mind, you know, and the way the music is, you know, optimistic at the beginning. It's supposed to feel almost like, you know, like a commercial from, like, you know, the 50s, right? Mm-hmm. Or the 60s, where it's like very cinematic, sort of like, here's the American dream for African Americans, you know. And then it, you know, transitions towards the end. And I really, like, I mean, all that to say, as an intro, like, musically, everything else, it gets me completely pumped and ready for the second song every single time. I don't skip it at all.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Anything else you want to say about the intro?
Nah, I think it is. I think it encompasses the, I think you said it best. I have nothing to add.
And I should point out, I have credits for this, so I will try to give credit to everybody along the way, because there are a lot of people who helped out in this. Intro is produced by Dre and Focus.
Do you have the official credits? Because I know I saw Focus sent the message out that the credits that were floating around aren't correct.
Right. So what people have are the writing credits, and then people are extrapolating off of that. The problem is that Focus doesn't just serve as a producer, but he's also sometimes just straight up like an instrumentalist for Dre. So we have a lot of Focus helps out all over the album. It's just a question of, was he producing or was he literally just like playing keys on a song? That's the one part that people don't really know. But the iTunes version, like, you can see the writing credits, so like people know at least who helped write it, you know.
Yeah.
It's Dre and maybe Focus. Track two is a fascinating song for me anyway. Talk About It, featuring King Mez and Justice, produced by Dre and DJ Dahi. How do you feel about this record right now?
It's still growing on me, just because, you know, with the Dr. Dre album, I guess I want to hear a certain sound from him. So it's like, it's me taking down the walls of my expectations and then listening to it with like a clear perspective. So, you know, I guess I want to hear something specific from Dre, and this doesn't give me what I want to hear from Dre. So I end up skipping it a lot.
Yeah. It's a jarring record to me. In the way that, like, the intro, like the way that the instrumentation in the background transitions and gets almost like sinister in a way, right? It's very dark. And the way that it leads up to Talk About It, like, I feel like it should just like completely like knock so hard. But I don't know what it is. There is something about it where I'm just like, eh. It's still early, but like, This is not, like, I don't really like King Mez on here. I'm not really a fan of Justice on here.
You could tell Mez did a lot of writing on this album.
Yeah, I think people have been assuming that Kendrick is writing, but actually I think that's Mez.
I can tell the Kendrick
right
verses. They are a lot more detailed.
They are.
And lyrical from a detailed standpoint. Mez's stuff is a lot more melodic and tempoed, and he's more flow based than lyrics based.
Right.
Especially compared to Kendrick, who, you know, is largely considered to be one of the best writers out right now, and the best MCs.
Sure.
Sure, that there's gonna be a difference, and if you study lyrics enough, you can tell the difference.
Right. Right. But just off the flow, like, I think people would hear, because we haven't even talked about it, and it's arguably the most jarring part about this entire project, which is that there are songs where Dr. Dre is unrecognizable.
Oh my God. Yes. Yes.
This is one of them.
Like, Snoop as well. It's getting a little further, but there's a.
Right, yeah, right, right, right.
I'll wait.
No, it's okay. But like, when Dre starts off, like, it's not until he, you know, he gets to the part about like headphones and Eminem checks, and I'm like, wait a minute. Is this Dr. Dre?
Yeah.
His voice is higher.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an aggression to it that we haven't heard from Dre. Maybe, I won't say ever, but in a very long time. I've seen a lot of people really compliment that. Like, they feel like Dre sounds rejuvenated. I just think he almost doesn't sound like Dre. And I'm sure that's my prejudice showing through. Like you said, like, we expect a Dre song to sound like a Dre song. But it's like, what? It's just, I don't know. I'm still trying to figure it out. But like, the first immediate reaction is, no.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about this kid, Justice?
I can't tell. I still can't tell the difference between him and Mez.
Oh, Justice is the kid singing.
Oh, word? Okay.
Right. He sounds, oh, I guess it's going to sound awful.
You know, it's funny. I think it's so weird. Like, a lot of the hooks on here don't, I'm still trying to, that's another piece that I'm trying to really pull out. Because even Marsha, and I love Marsha Ambrosius, but on a lot of these hooks, she doesn't sound like her.
Yeah.
So I'm still trying to feel those out.
Right. I don't know. To me, Justice kind of sound, I don't know. There's definitely, and you know what, given he's a newer artist, like, it's hard not to have this influence. He sounds a little Drake-ish.
Sheesh, who doesn't sound like Drake nowadays?
I know. But, again, one thing that is all over this album is singing hooks.
Yeah. But I mean,
there are very few rap hooks on this album.
Yeah, but there's a lot of rapping on this album. So
sure,
it breaks it up. There's a lot of rapping on this album.
Right,
lots.
But no, just in general, talk about it. Like, nah, I'm good. I feel like it should work, but there's just something missing.
So what do you say to the people who, I've heard a lot of chatter about this album being overproduced?
Yes. It is, it's a headphone album.
It is a headphone album.
Which is also not Dre-like at all. So like, Dre stuff, typically, like, you play it really loud on speakers, it sounds great. You listen on headphones and you might catch extra details, right? It's sort of, but it's mixed for headphones. It is absolutely for headphones. Not all the songs, many of them though. But Talk About It just sounds, Talk About It's not even one of the busier ones. I mean, there's a lot going on here. And this is also a much more modern sound for Dre, which we haven't even talked about. I'm guessing that's Dahi's influence, right? But you tell me this is a Dre beat and I'm like, okay. Like, you know, it's different. I'm not really sure.
Yeah. I think that might be it. It's a little. It's like, I don't know if I want to hear Dre on a. Yeah. Okay. Let's.
You don't want to hear Dre on trap drums.
Yeah. Not. And then like the first voice I hear on a Dre album is not Dre.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And he's screaming at me.
There's a lot. Yeah. Let's talk about Genocide.
Yes.
Track 3, featuring, I think it's Candice Pillay, Kendrick, and Marsh Ambrosius, produced by Dre and Dem Joints.
Yes.
It's a funky little track.
The
beat caught me immediately.
Yes.
It's not over the top, but it's sort of like just gets in your head, that little descending bass riff, like just sort of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You like this one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
All of the yeses in order from top to bottom.
I don't quite think Dre sounds like Dre again here. I think I'm looking at the lyrics right now in Rap Genius. There's some Kendrick in there.
Oh, absolutely. That's what I meant by you can tell the songs that Kendrick wrote.
Right. I mean, the fact that he says Rosecrans, I was like, oh, that's the.
There you go. It's like how certain ghostwriters like leave their mark to let them know, you know, like when you could tell when Game ghostwrites with somebody because he name drops.
Right. Right.
You know, so
I don't know if I love Marsh's hook, but it's cool.
I like this record. People really talk about this Kendrick verse. But this isn't my favorite Kendrick verse on this album.
I'm very interested to hear what your favorite Kendrick verse is when we'll get there. I like it. I think it's a really dope verse.
Yeah. No, Kendrick bodied, and me saying that does not negate the fact that he absolutely bodied this record.
Yeah.
I like this record a lot.
I love that. The only way I can describe it is Boyz II Men-ish bridge after Kendrick's verse.
It was more of a Take Six vibe for me. No, I'm not. And I'm not saying in a. It was like a sort of a jazz,
a little bit,
sort of, you know, doo-wop group or whatever.
Right, like, right, right, right. I love that though. That was like totally out of left field. But no, it's a dope song. I even like the white girl from South Africa doing the reggae on the first verse. Who knew?
That's funny.
It works. But yeah, this is it's not an overwhelming beat. It's not like you know, like some of these beats, like they try to like punch you in the face. This one doesn't, but it just sort of works nicely. It's a dope song.
Yep.
It's All On Me. Featuring BJ, Chicago Kid, and Justice, produced by Dre and Bink.
I'm just gonna bow out on this one. I'm not ready to talk about this record yet.
I'm gonna use a word that's a loaded word. This is a soft beat.
So do you think that this do you think the sequencing hurts this?
Well, I think in general, I think between Talk About It and this record, I feel like the album gets off to a little bit of a you're right. I would say the sequencing doesn't really make any sense, especially at the beginning. This is also it doesn't really, this, I mean, I don't know, just in general, like this does not feel like a typical Dre record at all, which, you know, that's okay. You know, it's a smooth song. That's all I can really say. I love the hook. Yeah, I skip it. That's all I'm going to say. I skip it. Not my favorite. You said you're still trying to, you know,
yeah.
Are you leaning positive, negative, or you just don't know?
I'm still in the middle right now.
All right.
It's not a record that I sit in right now. I think I'm at the stage now where I'm finally ready to let the album play all the way through. I'm still like, I really, really like the records that I really, really like. And then it's like, all right, now let me go back and play the whole album.
Right.
So this is one of those records that will probably sound better when I let it ride all the way through. But right now I'm not ready.
Okay. All in a Day's Work featuring Anderson .Paak and Marsh Ambrosius, produced by, we got a whole bunch of people, Dre, Dahi, and DJ Khalil.
Yeah, these are DJ Khalil drums, without question.
Right. So it opens with a Jimmy Iovine speech, ironically.
Oh, is that who that is?
Yeah.
Okay.
How do you feel about this?
The nuts, same.
I love this beat. Love this beat.
Okay.
This is, like, this is the point where I'm like, oh yeah, now we're hopefully getting rolling. Like, I love the bass. I like Anderson on the hook. This is a really great example, like earlier when I was talking about sort of unorthodox song structure. Like, first you've got a spoken intro from Jimmy Iovine, then you've got Anderson .Paak doing a verse, got a bridge. You got Dre and Anderson going back and forth. Then you got Marsha and Anderson going back and forth. Then you got Dre. Then you, like, it's all over. And then the hook doesn't even come into the very end. Really, really sort of weird. And I almost kind of wish, like, I kind of wish this song was more conventional in a sense. I felt like it almost could have been maybe not a single, but I feel like it would have maybe stood out a little more. Like, that's a good hook. Like, use it like a hook. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I like it. I like the song. I love the details on this. Like, this is a case where like the headphone mixing, like sort of the headphone-esque aspect of the album, like, you know, this is gonna sound so nerdy, but I'm telling you, at the end, like, what, like, they're doing the little hi-hat detail, and the hi-hats actually are reflected in the next song and how that plays. Like, that's a really, like, nerdy, dope detail that I love. But, you know, I kind of wish it was also, like, a regular song. But I like it. I like this beat a lot.
Yeah.
I also think Dre doesn't sound like himself at all on here.
I guess the better question is, what song on this album does Dre sound like Dre?
Going through my notes, it's a good question. Once he gets to that, there's, like, the record with Ice Cube, I think he sounds like him.
Okay.
Q
probably wrote that verse.
Actually, ironically, Talking to My Diary, even though that's, we'll talk about that when we get there. Like, it's not a typical Dre song, but there are definitely, like, two Dr. Dre's in this album. Regardless of flow, there's, like, deep voice Dre, and then there's, like, agitated, higher voice Dre. Right? I mean,
I'm laughing at deep voice Dre.
Steal.
There's a lot of stills on this album. Like, this
there's not a lot of stills on the album, actually. I was looking for them. There's not as many as I hoped.
Man, look. I wait. There's one record in particular that is chuck full of stills.
I mean, it's not like still DRE. Like, not that many stills where it's like, you know.
That's the concept of the song. Come on, guy. Come on.
Speaking of ambitious records, let's talk about Dark Side and Gone.
Yes.
Produced by Dre and Best Kept Secret, featuring King Mez, Marsha, and Kendrick. There is a lot going on here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to talk about Dark Side first. I like King Mez a lot better on here. He's not yelling at me, for starters. You can tell that, like, it's kind of weird that Dre goes immediately after him on the first part, because you could tell that King Mez wrote the verse, because if you're not paying too close attention, it kind of sounds like the same person still rapping.
Right.
How do you feel about this beat for Dark Side?
It's very hard. It's like the Dark Side is cool.
It's cool.
I'm just waiting on Gone.
Right. Dark Side is cool. There's actually a lot of, like, there's a lot of side musical elements going on. I think the beat is cool, but it's a little busy. But I love the transition into, whether you care or not about the little easy, like, two lines or whatever, but just the way it sort of echoes out and builds up to Gone. And then you grow Marsha. It's a good hook. And it's funny, right? Because so Dark Side has a beat, and then the hook for Gone has a beat, and then they completely come out of right field. You know, they completely are like, oh, you want a Dr. Dre beat? Here's your Dr. Dre beat.
Yes.
Gone is what I was waiting for.
Yes. Gone is crazy.
I love the beat to Gone.
Yeah. I love Marsh on this. Love the hook. I just love this record. This record is insane.
If the whole song had, like, the beat from the hook underneath it, I don't think it would work as well. It's not that it's a bad beat. It's the contrast that really works. And then, oh man, the chords that kick in on the last four bars. Woo! Good God!
That's some nerdy doc stuff right there.
It's a Dre, you know, it's when I talked about, like, the typical sort of Dre pattern, like, Gone is, the beat structure to Gone is more, that is, like, what we are used to hearing. Let's talk about your man Kendrick.
Okay.
He is in, like, how M was on Dre's 2001 album. That is, like, the zone that Kendrick is in right now.
Interesting.
I guess that makes King Mez the hitman of this album. I don't know if that bodes well for King Mez or not.
Hey, I liked Hitman, so.
Remember that record he had at the end of
Absolutely.
I don't even know what to say it. It's was it the Forgot About Dre video?
Yes.
Everybody was just like, what is that?
It's out too.
Yeah, he had a whole project that came out.
Yeah, his whole project came out. Yep. Dang.
Hitman was underrated. I went back and listened to 2001. I feel like it's a flawed album to me, but the opening run. What's that?
I said, oh, it's flawed to you? Don't say.
But the opening run is flawless. It's incredible. And even now, it just sounds so good.
Listen, man, I was out running errands and I had a West Coast playlist going on. And actually, know what? I had Spotify Radio going on. And What's the Difference came on.
Oh,
man. that might be top five Dre for me.
Is it going to hurt you when I tell you that that's a sample?
No, I know it's a sample.
Okay.
Yeah, I know it's a sample.
Okay.
Nah, come on. You talk.
Listen, I'm just saying, a lot of people don't realize how much Dre samples.
Dre samples a lot. So there's a lot of samples on here that are replayed.
Right, a lot of replayed samples.
There was one that I meant to talk about, and I didn't write it down, unfortunately, but there's one that people don't realize, but it's absolutely a sample.
What's the difference? Didn't Blue Cantrell take that for something?
I think it was a remix to Hit 'Em Up Style.
You got motorcycles going in the background? You got like a biker gang out your window?
Come on, man. Rough Riders is here. You know what I'm saying? It's so, yo, I
sounds like Meek Mill's Instagram over there.
Ah, that's funny.
Kendrick is like, I've seen people try to rank, like online, try to like rank his albums. Try to rank his verses on this album. He's just killing all of this.
You got birds. Yo, John, what is that?
It's like Raekwon's rainy day outside right now.
Yeah, for real. got baby back there.
You know what? It's a humid day. I need the window open. Anyway, now we're bringing that real ambiance to Clock Radio Speakers.
It's raining.
Listen, you can't tell me nothing about Blue Raspberry. Nothing.
What about Black Shampoo?
Who? I love this Kendrick verse. I love all these Kendrick verses. I'm gonna say something, you're gonna get mad. It's nice to hear Kendrick on some conventional beats. That's all I'm gonna say.
I heard people talk about, you know, they're glad that, you know, Kendrick isn't on jazz beats.
I like To Pimp a Butterfly a lot. It is not an album I find myself going back and listening to all the time. It is a challenging listen, in a good way. It's a challenging listen. I appreciate Kendrick on more conventional beats. It's a good mix. That's all I'm going to say. But I love Gone. Overall, so far, Gone is the best thing on this album, right? So up to this point.
Yeah.
Up to track six. So what do you like? You like Genocide better?
I'm sorry. You said
up gone. To this point. Yeah, Gone.
You said so far, comma, gone. I'm sorry. Yes.
Right.
My bad. Yes, that is correct.
You thought I just pulled Drake into there out of nowhere.
Yeah, I thought you Draked that out. I was like, huh?
Trying to get our SEO game up.
We hope you enjoyed Side A of this week's episode. Please check out Side B at clockradiospeakers.com.